Pod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 477 for Wednesday, the 25th of November, 2015. My name is Harry Lloyd, and I'm joined by Moto America expert Scott Bolton. Scott, how is it going?
It's going great, Harry. Good to be on the show.
Yeah, it's nice. I think the last time we probably had you on the show was when you and Jim did a show a fair while back now. But we had a fair few requests to talk about domestic series, and as the go-to man for Moto America, we thought we'd get Scott on the show to talk about that one. But first, there's one or two bits of news, as always, to touch on. This week, we also have some interviews. Speaking of Moto America, Jim Race was out for the Las Vegas Super Prestigio, so he managed to get chats with Anthony West, Roger Lee Hayden, Stevie Bonzi, and Tony Elias. So yeah, hopefully it'll be a pretty full show, and yeah, it's gonna be a big one. But first of all, perhaps the most important part of the show is a big Motopod happy birthday to Martin Darlington, who is apparently a very big fan of Eugene Laverty and Sylvain Gintoli. You people out there in Motopod land can maybe figure out how they relate to Martin's birthday, but a big happy birthday from everyone here at Motopod.
HBD, Martin.
Yep, certainly. So now to some slightly unfortunate news. Alicia Spargo injured his back, fracturing his T9 vertebra during motocross, which meant that he wasn't able to go to the private Suzuki X-Star test in Sepang. Although I did notice that on his Instagram, Alicia was still healthy enough to go on his very nice holiday with his very attractive wife. So clearly the rehabilitation is going well.
Priorities in order.
Exactly. Maverick Vinales was at the test with Suda and Aoki, the two Japanese test riders, and they debuted their seamless gearbox. So that should be a big step forward for Suzuki, because that was one of the big things that they were missing in 2015. But no times released from that test. And obviously, you know, testing times, as ever, grain of salt. Then in more testing news, and this was quite a big one, we got official word. We'd heard a rumor during the Valencia test, but now it's been official that Casey Stoner will be moving back to Ducati Corsi for 2016. He will be a test rider and a Ducati brand ambassador. Interesting. No wild cards confirmed yet, but I think we all live in hope that Casey Stoner will be racing around PI on a GP16 this year. But, you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, don't you think it's a lot bigger, you know, chance that that'll happen now that he's with Ducati than it was before when he was with Honda? Because obviously he wanted an opportunity for that and I guess got snubbed, and which might have something to do with this move, you know, indirectly.
Yeah, certainly. It seems like the not getting to sub in for Danny Pedrosa at the start of the year, as you quite rightly say, was one of the big reasons. And then the other big reason was apparently that Honda weren't listening to him in the development. Apparently Casey Stoner was one of the main guys saying, hey, this engine's way too aggressive, it's not going to work. It's been quite interesting reading people's comments on Stoner. You know, some people say that he's a terrible development rider and that he can only make unrideable bikes. And then the other half say, no, he's actually a very good development rider. And when you look at the bikes that he's gotten on, he's transformed them from not great bikes to you know, championship winning bikes. Like if we quickly go to the RC212V, i.e. the 800cc Honda, before Casey Stoner got there, there weren't more than about four wins in a season. You know, in 2007, Pedrosa got two wins. In 2008, Pedrosa got two wins. In 2009, Pedrosa got two wins. Dovi got one. That was in the wet. In 2010, Pedrosa got four wins. And then obviously when Casey Stoner stepped onto it in 2011, he won the title. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that then also carried over to the RC213V, the 1000cc Honda, where Stoner and Pedrosa both won a lot of races in 2012. Obviously, Stoner had his injury, so missed a fair few. Then, obviously, Marquez dominated in 2013 and 2014. But now that Marquez and Pedrosa really had to take the reins of development, it seems like that's where the bike has sort of faded off. So I don't think that Casey Stoner is quite as bad a development rider as everyone says, but who knows? Certainly if both Dovizioso and Iannone suddenly start struggling, then maybe there's a grain of truth to that whole thing.
Yeah, and you know, I'd also heard, I guess there was maybe a little bit of fallout from the Suzuka crash.
Certainly, Stoner was not pleased with almost dying.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he goes and what he can do. Early rumours suggest that, unfortunately, Stoner won't be at Sepang or at Qatar, either of those tests, and he'll probably do some private testing just before. So, unfortunately, we won't get to see Stoner sliding it through turn three at Sepang just yet, but soon. Obviously, with 2015 over, it's now full 2016 mode, and MotoGP have announced a revised 2016 calendar. Sachsenring has been moved to the 17th of the 7th, so that avoids clashing with an F1 race in Germany. The British GP is now the 4th of the 9th, so that's probably quite important for many of our British listeners. And the Malaysia round is now on the 30th of the 10th, and Valencia is the 13th of the 11th, so I think Valencia got pushed back a week. But just one or two reshufflings with the 2016 calendar there. And funnily enough, MotoGP and World Superbike don't clash in any race weekend apart from Argentina, but when MotoGP is in Argentina, World Superbike are in Aragon, so the time difference means that no one out there has to choose.
That's a good thing. That'll make for some easier race weekends for us, you know, for us fans for sure.
Yeah.
You know, having to do the doubles, you know, on weekends. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, it should be good, and that is sort of one good thing about both Superbike and MotoGP being under the Dorna umbrella, is that they can schedule these things. Speaking of Superbikes and MotoGP, some of the Superbike teams and some of the MotoGP teams have been participating in a private test in Jerez. So all of the Ducati MotoGP teams are there, then the Ducati factory team from Superbike, Hayden and Michael Vandermark are there for Honda, Pedroza and Marquez are there for Honda, and then also the Kawasaki team and Yamaha were there. There are some times coming out, mostly the Superbike guys who are running transponders. It seems like both those Kawasakis are still devilishly quick. Hayden's getting up there. He's not too far off. He's sort of there or thereabouts where Chaz Davies is, so maybe in podium contention, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I did notice today he was, I guess, Sox was quickest with Ray second, Davies third, and Hayden fourth. But I think Hayden was only about 7/10 off of Sox time. So, and, you know, sure, it's still just testing. But, yeah, it's, you know, looking kind of promising. I mean, of course, I remember Nicky from the last time he rode a Superbike for full time in 2002 when he, in my mind, is the best season he's ever had. I mean, that's the year he won the Daytona 200 when it was still a prestigious event, you know, on Superbikes. He won, you know, the AMA Superbike title that year, several races, you know, beating the likes of, you know, Mladen and some really stiff competition. And he actually won some AMA Pro Dirt Track races that year. I mean, he was the do-it-all guy that year, and, you know, that I think that was definitely the year he shined the most in his career. You know, obviously the 2006 championship, but as far as just a total year's point of view, you know, that was an incredible year that he had in 2002. So yeah, it's good to see him back on the Superbike, and I know us Americans have high hopes, and you know, there's some doubts that whether, you know, his the speed that he has, you know, in 34 years old and whatever, but me and a lot of others that I know still have a lot of faith in Nicky Hayden. And, you know, I noticed yesterday he had churned out 74 laps, most of anybody. So, you know,
he's still a hard worker.
Exactly. You got to admire the guy's work ethic. So it's looking good for him in early days anyway.
Yeah, certainly. There are a fair few crashes at the test, actually. Sam Lowe's, that is. Is it Sam or Alex? No, it's Alex Lowe's, sorry.
Alex.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, yeah. Well, it's so hard to get them the right way around. Anyway, Alex Lowe's, he crashed and unfortunately dislocated his left shoulder. On Paul Denning's Twitter, there's quite an unfortunate photo of what was left of Lowe's shark helmet, and it was quite apparent that Lowe's had been sliding face first along the ground for a fair bit. So luckily the helmet did its job. There was also a crash for Eugene Laverty on the GP14.2, and Laverty broke his left wrist, which, in terms of MotoGP off-season, now is probably the best time to do it, because the next test that they'll have is in early February. But unfortunately for Laverty, he's getting married in a few days, so that might make the wedding a bit awkward.
Yeah, and I think I saw where he was headed for, I think somewhere in Spain for surgery tomorrow to get the arm bladed. So,
Yep. I think he's heading to Barcelona to go under the knife of the famous Dr. Mir.
Dr. Mir,
So
yes.
hopefully he'll be okay. There were also some other injuries. Michael van der Mark, he unfortunately couldn't do the final 2 days of testing because he was suffering from arm pump. So he was going to Belgium for a consultation on that. So yeah, testing not as safe as it seems, but it does seem like especially the Repsol Honda guys in MotoGP, they're still not quite happy with the electronics. It seems like they're more or less okay with the Michelin tires. They know that they need to adjust their style, and that it won't just be, push the front like it was on Bridgestones. But yeah, electronics seem to be worrying some one or two people.
Yeah, and of course, Honda had their own electronics for, these years leading up to now, and so that they're obviously, are having to, tune back to a level that, some of the other teams are, that didn't have quite the level of, electronics that Honda has developed over the up to the, this point in time. So you got to figure it's a bigger challenge for them to back up and try to start over again.
Yeah, and one of the big challenges with electronics is that how the factory Yamaha and factory Honda electronics worked is that as the race went on, the electronics would essentially learn and they'd be able to adjust sector by sector. They'd see that, oh, the tire's sliding this much through this sector, so we need to change the traction control in this way, the engine braking in this way. And basically, the rider could, in theory, ride without changing a setting. But now, with the Magneti-Marelli unified software, they still have different maps. So, map one might be 100% traction control and 0% engine braking. Map two might be 50-50. And then map three might be the opposite way or whatever. But now the rider has to manually change between those three settings. So, pit boards and stuff like that for the team to try and tell the rider when to change will be pretty important now.
And wasn't Yamaha already using Magneto Marelli?
Well, all of the teams were using Magneti-Marelli hardware,
Magneto, right.
but only the open guys were using the Magneti-Marelli software.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the whole. I was talking to Dylan Gray today about it, and it's incredibly confusing. All of it. Yeah, it's hard to explain. I think I need to do some more reading on it to try and put it into like simple terms because I honestly still don't fully understand. Everything that the electronics, everything involving the electronics change. But all I know for next year is that everyone is on the same ECU hardware, same ECU software. Each factory is allowed one of their own extra sensors. So, say Honda want a tire temperature reader and Yamaha want a belly pan height reader or something. They're each allowed to run those, but they have to homologate the sensor so that, say, Ducati could come in and buy that sensor if they wanted to.
Wow. It was interesting, Harry. Speaking to Nicky Hayden, I did read comments that he had made after getting on the Honda Superbike that the level of the electronics on it were better than on his open class
Really?
Honda.
That's quite interesting because it seems like the Honda Superbike of all the superbikes seems to be the one with the most trouble in the electronics department. When Johnny Ray was on that bike, it always seemed like, every week they'd have some new big electronics upgrade. So that's really interesting to hear Nicky say that.
Yeah, and he also said that they were having to dial it back a good bit for him compared to their riders, Gintoli and Vandermark from last year. That because Nicky said, he relies more on his wrist, and that they were actually having to tune it back for him quite a bit from what they were used to, their. Well, Vandermark, and then previously Gintoli running with last year.
That's quite interesting. I hadn't read that, but yeah, I know more signs that hopefully Nicky Hayden will be competitive. Because yeah, Superbikes. While it was nice to see Jonathan Rea win, it'd be nice to see him have to fight for it a bit more instead of running away.
Absolutely.
The running away thing is kind of a nice segue into our Moto America discussion. From the outside looking in, it really seemed like, especially in the Superbike class in Moto America, it was really those two factory Yamahas that championship was between. It seemed like both those guys were on sort of another level in terms of both equipment and skill to the rest of the field. What would you say to that?
Yeah, no doubt. And of course, you know, the Yoshimura Suzukis with Roger Hayden and Jake Lewis. And well, of course, you got to look at the fact that Jake Lewis, you know, it was his rookie year on a superbike. But, you know, that GSXR 1000 is a little bit long in the tooth. They have announced, you know, just, I don't know if it was at ACMA, but they, you know, they do have a new model coming out in 2016. But as the season went on, you know, they seemed to, you know, at least Roger anyway, seemed to close the gap and was very, you know, very competitive towards the end of the season. But yeah, those are ones, you know, not only the Graves bikes with Hayes and Beaubier, but even the open class bikes of Jake Gagne on the factory racing Red Bull R1. Mm. And then some of the other open bikes were, you know, just an impressive bike, obviously. And of course, you know, some of the interviews I did that were, you know, were on Moto Podcast during the year with Beaubier and Hayes, especially Hayes, talking about how, you know, they were, you know, still developing the bike and, you know, refining it throughout the year and getting, you know, figuring out how to get more out of it even. So, yeah, very impressive.
Yeah. Do you think that it'll close up more next year, or do you think that because of the sort of the factory support and the level of that R1 that that teams like Graves get, do you think that those Yamahas will still have a leg up, or can you see maybe some more manufacturers stepping in for a factory effort?
You know, we're really hoping that some more factories will step in. There's great hope that Honda will eventually re-enter. You know, and I guess, Harry, obviously the American listeners are quite familiar with the scenario that occurred, but you know, some of our international listeners may not be so familiar with the fact that, of course, you know, Moto America came on this past season for the first year for them running the series after you know, kind of a lean time.
I think pounding into the ground of the AMA would maybe be a way to describe it.
Yeah, of course, you know, the DMG acquisition of the AMA Pro Racing back in, I guess it was 2008, 2009, you know, right, coupled with the economic crash, you know, it's just the perfect storm, and then some terrible management decisions right off the bat that ran off, you know, Honda, the biggest, you know, supporter of AMA racing up to that point, and Kawasaki, so this is this year has been a, you know, a breath of hope for our national series, and I think everybody you know, it feels positive about it. It's baby steps, you know. There's a lot of things that have to be repaired, and I think it was a good start to that, but it's going to be a process, and I think everybody involved is you know, realistic about that and realizes that it's going to take several years to hopefully you know, start seeing it get back to the level where it once, you know, close to where it once was and where we think it deserves to be.
Yeah, because obviously with Hayden leaving, there's now no Americans in MotoGP, which would be the first time since a couple of years ago both Edwards and Hayden missed a race, but before then, I can't even really think of a year off the top of my head that there wasn't an American racing full-time in MotoGP or in the Premier class, even going back to the 500s. But I must say, one of the things I liked most about Moto America, I watched coverage here and there, but I really liked the KTM RC Cup. And maybe it's not exclusive to Moto America, but what I really liked about the RC Cup was the kind of the grand finale they had in Britain with, you know, the top three riders from each sort of domestic series coming together for a super prestigio type event where it's, you know, the best of the best. I think that that's a really great initiative to, you know, bring kids from domestic series through and, you know, introduce them to new tracks and all that sort of thing. So I don't know. Yeah, I think that the KTM initiative there is quite nice.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, I attended several of the races this year, and the ones that I didn't attend, I watched, you know, on the Fans Choice live streaming. And yeah, the KTM Cup races were definitely you know, many weekends the best show out there. And I tell you what, let's just briefly, Harry, run over the you know, that particular class and some of the young riders that particularly stood out in it.
Okay, for it.
Yeah. So, and of course, I believe they only had five rounds this year, but it was very well attended as far as participants. I mean, they had upwards of 30 bikes on the grid at just about every round of it. And so as far as wins, Gage McAllister took five wins throughout the year, and then Anthony Maziato and Braden Ort, which I believe Braden is a Canadian, took two wins each. And they, along with a couple of the, let's say, I believe it was Hayden Schultz and I want to say maybe Brandon Altmaier were the five Americans that were invited to the, the RC Cup finals at Silverstone. So, and, you know, there we, you know, had a really good showing out of our guys. They, I think in race one, Braden Ort took third, and then I believe Gage McAllister had actually turned in the fastest lap of that race.
Yeah, nice.
Was able to start on pole for race two the next day. Unfortunately, you know, him and several other of the guys crashed, and Braden Ort managed to get a second on the second day, which I believe gave him second overall, and then Hayden Schultz got a third on day two. So that was a good showing, you know, for our guys over there. But I tell you, one of the most impressive showings to me was on race one, where Sean Kelly, a young Floridian, took that race one win. Now, he did not race in the Moto America KTM Cup because he was only 13 years old, and their minimum limit was 14. So he raced in Mexico in the KTM Cup. Yeah, so he looked really impressive out there. And he has since been accepted to the MotoGP Red Bull Rookies Cup class for 2016.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so that's...
Interesting you mentioned the Red Bull Rookies Cup, because every champion in the Moto America class is either a former Red Bull Rookie champion or former Red Bull Rookie race winner.
Yeah, some of our guys have, you know, definitely had some success over there. Of course, Jake Gagne, you know, Joe Roberts that won the Super Sport 600 championship in Moto America this year. He was in the Red Bull Rookies Cup for several years, and JD Beach, you know, the super sport winner and champion. So yeah, we've had some good success over there, but it unfortunately hasn't parlayed into any really international opportunities for those guys for the most part.
Yeah,
up to this point.
Yeah. I mean, and as you say, with things like Moto America, it is still early days. You know, it's taken BSB a fair few years after it came under new management to build up to where it's now sort of the leading domestic bike series. So there's definitely a ways to go, and certainly Moto America is in a much better place than Australian Superbike. We were going to try and cover Australian Superbike on this bit of a domestic show, but in all honesty, Australian Superbike's a bit of a mess just in terms of everything. You know, I saw lots of people complain that there weren't many factory teams or much factory support for Moto America, but if you thought Moto America was lacking factory support, then try going to an Australian Superbike, because, yeah, lots of those bikes are really, you know, stock bikes. You know, lots of guys just wearing off-the-peg leathers, and Troy Bayliss has actually been given a much more involved role for the coming years, and his goal is to try and resurrect Australian Superbike, much like Moto America / the AMA has sort of, you know, brought it out of the ashes to try and build up, you know, a country that once did have such a proud history of producing champions.
Yeah, and you know, you speak of the BSB, you know, connection, and of course, you know, Stuart Higgs is on weekends where it doesn't, you know, where there's not a conflict, he is actually, you know, helping out with the race direction, you know, with the Moto America series. So So yeah, they've got some good people in place. You know, obviously Wayne Rainey, you know, that goes without saying. You know, his, you know, background and his passion for the sport, and of course, you know, there again for the KTM Cup, you know, that's something I know that was, you know, that he was really adamant about, is having a pipeline for the young riders to be able to move, you know, a place they can start and be able to start moving up the ladder, and you know, hopefully eventually, you know, have a shot at some international competition. But then, you know, we've got Chuck Axland, you know, the former Kenny Roberts team manager, that they've got some really good people in place. I think Doug Chandler, you know, former MotoGP and Superbike rider, has been, you know, helping out in certain areas this year, and several others. So they've got some good people in place, and like I say, it's, you know, just really saw in the paddock talking to competitors, team principals, and you know, media people, and even the fans throughout the year, that it's a lot more positive outlook now that that those guys are at the helm.
Yeah, and it seems like, as you'll hear, as the listeners out there will hear a bit later in the chat with Ant West, it seems like some big names like Ant West are now starting to be attracted to the Moto America series. And, you know, we saw with John Hopkins going to BSB that really gave BSB a huge spurt of fandom. So it'd be interesting to see what maybe one or two XGP guys or X-World Superbike guys could do if they went over to Moto America to help out bring in some more crowd and some more eyeballs into that series as well.
Yeah, and you know, that's one thing that, you know, when I interviewed Wayne Rainey back at Road Atlanta at the second round this year, you know, that he said, not, you know, of course, you know, one of the priorities was providing a way for some of our young and upcoming talent to have a shot at going overseas and, you know, getting in the big show, but also to have a series that was attractive to international riders that would want to come over here and you know, do battle you know, with our riders. So yeah, it seems to be working. Of course, this year, you know, if we look at the let's see, it was the Superstock 600 class where we had Joe Roberts pretty much dominated that particular class, and you know, that class was really healthy. I mean, we had you know, it wasn't unusual most rounds to have upwards of 40 bikes on the grid.
That's a lot.
Oh yeah. So I mean, you know, definitely good participation in that class, and you know, it's the Super Stock 600 class. It was a step below the Super Sport class, but yeah, it really drew a lot of competitors. Yeah, and you had a lot of the younger riders in the class, but you also had some you know, like some veteran you know, some well-known club racers, you know, that here in America that would take part in some of those races. So it was a good mix. But yeah, Joe Roberts, I mean, he dominated that class with 9 wins. And but there was the young man that finished second, Richie Escalante, is a young Mexican rider, and even though he did just have one win, he was right there, you know, pushing Roberts for a good part of the season at most of the races. So so yeah, you know, that's, there again, a refreshing thing to see, you know, more international competition, you know, eyeing Moto America for, you know, for the, you know, their future. So yeah, that was good to see. Just quickly, and as long as we're on that class, the other riders that took a win each was Travis Wyman, Bryce Prince, and Michael Gilbert. So, but yeah, Joe Roberts, you know, and as we said earlier, you know, Joe did several years in the Red Bull, MotoGP Red Bull Cup. And he's, you know, I think he's really a one to watch in the future. He, you know, he came on the scene a couple of years ago in the then DMG, I forget what they called it then, but basically that same class. And in his, you know, he won, like, I think every race he entered, he was an abbreviated schedule. But then last year, he ran for John Ulrich's Team Hammer when the 1 year they switched to Honda. And he didn't have that great of a year. And plus, it's something he told me when I interviewed him back at Road Atlanta earlier in the year. He was going through this major growing spurt during that time, and he was having problems with his knees. Mm. And he thinks that's what it was just the growth he was going through at the time. But so he didn't have a great year last year. So when he signed on with Mean Motorsports, along with Josh Herron, of course, coming back over from his ill-fated Moto2 attempt from last year. You know, they slotted him back in the 600 Superstock class because his confidence had took a bit of a hit. So he really, you know, seemed to have regained that confidence throughout the year. And, of course, he did have some wild card rides in the 600 Super Sport class and won, you know, won one race later in the year in that class. So I think Joe Roberts is you know, definitely one of our bright hopes for the future.
Yeah, definitely.
Just going farther, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And there's also a couple of American riders who are trying to make it over to CEV next year. We'll get to talking about CEV in just a little bit. CEV, for those who don't know, is obviously the Spanish domestic championship. The Superbike class there is classed as the European Superbike Championship. The Moto2 class / Stock 600 class is classed as the Moto2 European Championship. And then the Moto3 class is a Junior World Championship. But yeah, there's a couple of Americans hoping to head over there, right?
That is correct. Yeah, we'll touch on that here momentarily. Tell you what, let's just go ahead and run through the rest of the Moto America classes. Like I say, if we look at the Super Sport class, which was the main middleweight 600 class, JD Beach pretty much not starting out the year so much, but about the midpoint of the season, he just became pretty much unbeatable. He was winning races in what is normally a really tight class as far as, you know, finish margins. And he was just checking out and winning by, you know, 8-10 seconds, you know, over Josh Herron and then, you know, his Graves Yamaha teammate Garrett Gerloff. So, yeah, JD ended up with 8 wins on the season and just a banner year for him and taking that championship. Josh Herron, you know, like I said, he came back from a rough year, you know, dipping a toe in the Moto2 waters and definitely seemed to regain some of his confidence on the Mean Motorsports Yamaha. He ended up with 4 wins and was battling, still in the running, you know, battling JD for the title at Indy, where he, you know, had an unfortunate crash in the second race, and that kind of took him out of the contention. I think it was that weekend that JD actually wrapped up the title. And then JD's teammate, Garrett Gerloff, he managed to pull in 2 wins. And Garrett had injured one of his fingers. I believe it was, I don't know if it was Circuit of the Americas, or I believe it was. But anyway, that hindered him throughout the early part of the year, and I think it kind of knocked his confidence a bit, and he just started getting that back towards the end of the year. But those were your 3 main guys in that class. Now, of course, we did have Bobby Fong on the Lattice Triumph 675, and Bobby was he was definitely a podium contender throughout the year. He had got injured early in the year. Well, it was Circuit of the Americas where he had injured his shoulder.
I seem to remember something about that, and he tried to ride the next round, didn't he?
He did, actually. I did a short interview with him at Road Atlanta, and he tried to ride and just wasn't able. So he missed that race, and then but he came back for the next round at Virginia International. But he was, of course, you know, not quite back up to speed. So as the year went on, he got, you know, back up to speed and was a contender. But yeah. So and then you had the Aussie Dave Anthony. He was riding the Team Hammer, you know, GSXR 600, and I think he stood on a few podiums. You know, that was the first year that he hadn't ran his own team and was just the rider, and I think it was a little bit different situation for him. I'm not sure if he's going to be back on that bike again next year, but yeah, so, but like I say, definitely a really super year for JD Beach, and you know, JD's a likable guy. And, you know, there again, I think JD's one that a lot of us Americans have hopes of seeing him, you know, go beyond, you know, the American shores as his career goes on.
Yeah, certainly after your interviews with him, I was definitely looking for JD's name anytime I watched highlights or checked the results sheets. And luckily, you know, and as you said, I usually didn't have to look down too far to find his name because it's usually pretty close to the top.
Yeah. And of course, you know, JD being the dirt tracker and riding the flat track events any chance he gets, he's a fan favorite. You know, he's really getting a big fan following behind him, and deservedly so. Just a super super good kid, and very bright future ahead for JD, I think. And speaking of that class, actually, Josh Herron is moving up next year to the Superbikes. I believe he's going to run the Superstock 1000 class for Mean Motorsports on an R1. And Joe Roberts will also be with that team again, and he's moving up from the 600 Superstock to the Supersport class. And, it's hard, I know, when they're running consecutive weekends, but, you know, we're hoping with the new World Supersport rules, where it's gone more to the super stock specs, that some of our guys, when they do come to Laguna, will get to take a shot at the World Supersport guys. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and as you said, Moto America is hopefully running alongside World Superbike at Laguna, and then starting their year off alongside MotoGP at Circuit of the Americas, as they did in 2015. So hopefully that'll be able to, you know, one or two of those guys that you mentioned will be able to maybe hand out a CV or two, or show what they can do in a race to some of the big teams.
Yeah, that would be great. Not only here in America, but in other countries where the World Superbike Series goes as well, to that opportunity is more realistic now for some of your, national talent. I tell you what, let's go ahead and look at the Superbike, Superstock 1000 classes. And of course, now those classes ran together, but were scored separately as far as finishing positions and points.
Yeah, they do the same in the CEV Superbike class, because much like Moto America, there's a Superbike class, and then in CEV they call it a Privateers class. So it can get quite confusing, especially, I don't know about, or I seem to remember one or two times there was a stock bike on the overall podium. So that can make it quite confusing for some of the points.
Yeah, and they're actually changing that for next year. I read recently. Yeah, they're still going to score them as far as points. They're still going to have a separate point system, but as far as race position and finishing positions, they are going to start scoring them, you know, as they finish on the track, regardless of which class they're in. So I'm glad to see that, because in the Superstock 1000 class, Jake Gagne on the Road Race Factory Red Bull R1 just totally dominated for the most part. I mean, he came away with 13 wins on the season. Wow. And yeah, quite often he would have been standing on the Superbike podium or the overall podium. So he, and as far as I know, Gagne is going to be back with that team next year. Not sure if they'll still be in Superstock trim or if they might move up to Superbike. But yeah, Gagne is definitely a super talent, it was one interesting thing about Gagne this year. He actually went and ran one of the AMA motocross events. I believe it was out at Glen Helen in California, and not only qualified, but I believe he scored in the points, which was, we're talking, with Ryan Dungey and, James Stewart wasn't racing this year, but
big proper names.
Yeah, exactly. The top of the Supercross motocross group, and so Gagne really showed right there what an overall talent he is. So it'll be interesting to see how often he can get up there and knock some of those Superbike guys off of the podium if he is in fact on the Superstock spec machine again next year. Did have a. Wins also in that class by Taylor Knaup on the TOBC R1. Mark Heckles, the Brit, he got a race win, and that guy, he showed some impressive performances during the year to be running a pretty small program. Of course, he ran World Superbike back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I believe. So that, there again, and, talking about international competitors coming in. And then Josh Day on the Westby Yamalube R1 that took the seat in that team after the unfortunate passing of Dane Westby just before the season began. So he ended up with three wins on the season, and so that was. But I tell you, you know, there again, international riders coming in. We also had Sheridan Marais, the South African, come in after the second or third race of the year on an Aprilia. And he and Sheridan was on several weekends right up there, you know, with the top super stock guys and knocking on the door of the, you know, top three or four of the superbike riders. So it was good seeing Sheridan out there. You know, I got to interview him once during this year, and definitely you know, would like to see him come back again next year. If we go ahead and look at the Superbike Championship, as you mentioned earlier, obviously the Graves Yamaha duo of Cam Beaubier and Josh Hayes pretty much you know, dominated that class as far as wins. Cam took 8 wins over the course of the season, and Josh Hayes brought in 10 top spots throughout the year. Roger Hayden, Beaubier did edge out Hayes for the championship. Went right down to the last race, you know, Hayes made him work for it. And you know, that's one thing you got to appreciate about Josh Hayes. I mean, he'll try to help his teammate out any way he can. You know, he's had young teammates. Of course, Josh is not a young guy.
He's certainly one to try and push them to make them improve. He's not about to give them an inch, you know?
Yeah, like I said, once they get out on the track, they're going to have to work for it. He's not going to give them anything. So he definitely, you know, and that's, I think that was good for Cam, though, that, you know, to have Josh, you know, pushing him like that. So I think it helped Cam up his game a little bit. And like I said, Roger Hayden, man, you got to feel for Raj. He ringed the neck on that GSXR, that Yost GSXR this year, and came so close to taking a win. I mean, you know, I think it was race 2 at Indy, at the end of the day, the last race of the weekend. Him and Beaubier were battling, just, you know, tooth and nail. One of them would lead one lap, and the next lap, the other one would draft past the other one down the front straight and lead that lap. And of course, that race was rain shortened, and on the lap that, you know, it reverted back to after they threw the red flag, I forget, you know, how many hundredths of a second Beaubier was ahead of Hayes Hayden at the line. So, you know, hopefully that new GSXR, that 2016 model, will become available for them, you know, or if not starting the season, at least early on in the season, and they can start working with that and give the Graves guys a run for it next year. So, and gotta give a shout out to young Jake Lewis. I mean, Jake, like I said, it was his first year on a big bike on a major, you know, factory supported team like Yoshimura. And, you know, he had some rough spells early on, but, you know, he showed a lot of promise. And I think Jake's one of our young riders that we can really look forward to, hopefully being able to take it to the next level as his career moves on.
Yeah, I've certainly heard, even before stepping up to the big bikes, I'd certainly heard one or two things about Jake Lewis. He trains quite close with the Hayden brothers, doesn't he?
Yeah, he actually did live with Roger Hayden, and I think during about the midpoint of the year, he actually bought his own house up in the Owensboro, Kentucky area. But yeah, he trains with Roger and JD Beach and you know, those guys up around the OWB, as they call it. And he's definitely up in his game. Jake's a big kid, you know, I think he's you know, several inches beyond 6 feet. But you know, the superbike seems to be a good fit for him. So, he's showing some real promise, and some big hopes are being laid on his shoulder for the future, I believe.
Yeah, definitely some really interesting names to watch coming out of Moto America, and, you know, not only seeing how those riders evolve, but, as you said before, you know, it's the rookie season for the championship as a whole under this new management, so it can sort of only go up from here, and it seems like it's already working off a really solid base that should hopefully keep bringing the level up and up and up.
Yeah, they've of course they got off to a late start last year. The acquisition by Moto America of the rights for AMA Pro Racing came like mid late part of September, but they have already released a partial schedule for 2016 with seven races confirmed, and they're looking to, I believe, to have nine total, which is what they had last year. Of course, we have lost Indy, unfortunately, with the combined MotoGP weekend. But yeah, they, as you mentioned earlier, they will be starting out with MotoGP at Circuit of the Americas, and then them racing in conjunction with World Superbike is should happen. I don't know that it, I think it
July 10th, yeah. I believe, is the date for Mazda, for Laguna Seca, rather.
Right, and that is on the calendar. It currently, I believe, is showing to be confirmed, but you got to feel pretty sure that'll happen.
Yeah.
So looking forward to a even stronger second year for our revised series, and like I say, a lot of positive hopes for that. And unfortunately, we did have the incident as I mentioned earlier, where we lost one of our really up and coming stars in Dane Westby, before the season started. And then of course at Laguna Seca, the unfortunate starting line accident that took the lives of Bernat Martinez and Danny Rivas. So yeah, definitely want to keep those guys and their memory alive. And that was an unfortunate part of the year, but beyond that, it was very most everything about the year was very positive.
Yeah, certainly did seem like a big year. We'll quickly go onto Japanese superbikes. Japanese superbikes is a really interesting series. Back in the late 90s, Japanese superbikes was sort of like mini MotoGP. You had guys like Daryl Beatty coming through because there was a 500cc class in Japanese superbikes, and your Honda and Yamaha and Suzuki, they all had factory efforts in Japanese, well, what was then 500s. And the same with the 250cc class and the 125cc class. But since then, since the MotoGP bikes have gotten more and more advanced, and the cost has sort of spiraled out of control for any team reasonably able to run one of these bikes, is Japanese superbike has unfortunately dropped off a bit. Up until about the mid 2000s, you could actually run a MotoGP bike in Japanese superbike, but it's just that you wouldn't be scored. So guys. Teams like Yamaha and like Kawasaki would occasionally run their bikes just as extra testing time, and unsurprisingly, those MotoGP bikes would usually win the races. But this year, it's especially in the 1000cc, the superbike class in Japanese superbike, there's a lot of names that people will recognize from the Suzuka 8-hour and as being factory MotoGP test riders. The Yamaha test rider and part of the winning team at the Suzuka 8-hour for Yamaha, Katsuyuki Nakasuga, he won the series, 203 points. I think he won all but one race, and that was the first race of the year. Yamaha really put a lot of effort into that team to help develop the R1M, not only for superbike racing, but also for the Suzuka 8-hour, the Suzuka 8-hour is still an absolutely massive deal in Japan. I've heard rumors that the new Honda and the new Jix 1000 that you talked about earlier, Scott, both of those bikes are being designed just to win the Suzuka 8-hour. So it's a big thing here. But another 8-hour ace, Takumi Takahashi for Honda, he came second in the series with Watanabe Kazukai, the Kawasaki test rider. He was in third. Then the Suzuki test rider, he was in fourth. So a nice mix of bikes up there, but especially in that 1000cc Japanese superbike class, some of those riders are getting a bit long in the tooth. Australian Josh Hook, he also ran in that series with the FCC TSR team, and he did okay. He was in the top five most races. But perhaps the most interesting thing about the Japanese Superbike series is that not only do they have conventional short races, but they also have endurance races built into the championship. So one round it'll be, a short race, and then another race the next weekend it'll be a 4-hour endurance race. So it's definitely a nice mix.
Yeah, I guess, you know, behind the French, I guess, you know, the Japanese are more, you know, almost just as passionate about their endurance racing.
Yeah, they certainly are. And, you know, as I said, the Suzuka 8-Hour is a massive deal there. Like, guys make entire careers out of just winning the Suzuka 8-Hour. Akiyoshi, the guy who replaced Carol Abraham in Motegi, you know, he's a legend of the Suzuka 8-Hour, and that pretty much secured him a job with Honda for life.
Yeah, and the Suzuka seems to, you know, the 8-Hour seems to be making a comeback, you know, the last couple of years. You know, and you know, well, like this year, you know, you had, you know, Espargaro and Bradley Smith, you know, over there for Yamaha, and of course Stoner, you know, taking part in it. So yeah, definitely seems to be coming, you know, back on the rise as far as the level of prestige.
Yeah, it does seem like, you know, not only the Suzuka 8-Hour, but also Moto America and motorcycle racing in general in America seems to be on the rise as we sort of come out of this whole financial crisis sort of dealio. But aside from superbikes in Japan, they also run a Moto 2 class, which was won by Yuki Takahashi. He won that pretty handily as well. Then they also run a Moto 3 class, and that was won by Ryu Mizuno. He wildcarded at the Japanese GP. Unfortunately, the level in Japanese Moto 2 and Japanese 125s, Japanese Moto 3 is not so high. You know, you saw when those guys wildcarded, they weren't really pulling a Daijiro Kato and winning the race as a wildcard. And yeah, it's unfortunate. It seems like, especially with Japanese superbike in the lower classes, it's a way to then get through to the CEV and start racing there. I was talking to someone and he said that the mindset of Japanese racing is very different to the mindset and the style of European racing, is that in Japan, they're very much sit there and wait for the guy in front to make a mistake. Whereas in Europe, it's attack, 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 attack. Mm-hmm. So he was saying that when riders do come over from Asia, they really struggle in Europe to just adapt to the style of racing and how it's different.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, now that you mentioned that, you kind of see that in Moto 2, you know, with Nakagami, you know, if you think about it.
Yeah, and that's definitely been maybe not a trait of Noriyuki Haga, but of several other Japanese riders. There's always one to break the trend.
Yeah, Haga-san, he's definitely the exception there.
Yeah, definitely. But transitioning along to the CEV class, obviously we had Nicolò Belega. We talked a bit about this last week, but we had Belega crowned champion in the Moto3 Junior World Championship. And in the CEV, Moto3 is the main class. You know, it's not like where it's Superbike or MotoGP where the big bikes are the main draw. In CEV, it's really all about Moto3. That's where the factory teams are. That's where all of these up-and-coming riders are. And that's where, you know, there's talent throughout all the classes, but really in Moto3 is where there's a lot of really, really quick riders.
Yeah, it's, you know, you've seen the last couple of years, you know, several of our, you know, new up-and-coming, you know, future stars of the MotoGP series, you know, coming into Moto3 from the Spanish series. Yeah, definitely seems to be the main feeder class. You know, from the CEV Moto3 up into the MotoGP Moto3 class.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I can't think of any rider entering the World Championship next year in 2016 that wasn't in CEV this year, be it in the Moto3 or the Moto2 class, which shows the really high level. But, you know, there are a lot of riders who participated in the championship. They ran in Portimao, Le Mans, then various Spanish tracks. And as we've said a couple of times, if you go on YouTube and search CEV Repsol, you can watch all of those races for free with commentary and all that sort of thing. And if it doesn't work in your country, you can obviously download a VPN or a YouTube unblocker to watch those. But some names to watch for the future. Obviously, most of the top guys are moving up to the World Championship. Belega, Canet, and Mir, they're all moving up to the World Championship. They're three names to definitely watch. But other than that, some names to watch for next year in the CEV, if Motopod fans do want to watch. Tony Arbolino, a young Italian, racing for the SICK 58 Squadra Corsa. He's one to watch for sure. Rory Skinner, a young Scottish rider. He's with the Racing Steps Foundation, and he'll be doing a full season in the CEV next year. And he only did the last four races of the CEV this year because he was too young before. But he had some really, really impressive results, and he's definitely one to watch. But perhaps the most interesting rider out of all of them for me is Ayumi Sasaki. He did the final two rounds. Sasaki was the Shell Advanced Asia Talent Cup champion, which is sort of like an Asian Red Bull Rookies. He was the champion of that series. He also raced in the Red Bull Rookies. And he came in just for the last two races, a wild card, got on the podium in his first ever CEV race.
Wow.
And then he didn't do so great the second race because they made one or two changes. But yeah, Sasaki is definitely, certainly a Japanese rider to watch out for.
Yeah, and speaking of that, and I believe you, I'm sure, saw this young man compete as well there in a couple of races this year. He's a Mexican-born young man that's currently living in Texas, Gabriel Martinez Abrego.
Yep.
Yeah, and he's, riding for the Italian Worldwide Race Moto3 organization. And I believe he raced at Albacete and...
He was there for the final three rounds. He was unfortunately a fair bit off the pace. Uh-huh. I'm not going to lie. He was within the qualifying time, which was quite a big step. Lots of these guys go even faster than the Moto3 World Championship, but it definitely seems like he maybe needs one or two more years in that series to sort of hone his racecraft.
Yeah, and I actually looked him up on Facebook yesterday and saw where he was at Almeria with for a 2-day test with Mahindra. And I believe Carol Haneke and Danny Webb were there with him, kind of as in a mentor role. So you don't step into that series and at least on the norm become competitive right off the bat. So yeah, he might have a kind of a steep learning curve, but it's good to see he's got the opportunity. Obviously has some talent to get to that level, and hopefully he'll be able to build on that and be a force to be reckoned with as the next year or two goes by.
Yeah, certainly. In the Moto2 class, Pons and Xavi Vierge, they were sort of the kings of that class. Between them, they won every race. Two riders winning every race. So Vierge was only off the podium once, and that was when he crashed, and that sort of lost him the championship. Both those guys moving to the World Championship. Alan Tesche was third. He's a former World Championship rider. He'll be interesting to watch next year. Last year in the CEV, he was very blow hot or cold. He was either on the podium or in the gravel. This year, he was a lot more consistent, but maybe a bit too safe in some of his riding. Then Stephen Odendaal, the South African. He's been around a fair bit for a guy who's so young, and he'll be staying in that class next year as well. So I think that Odendaal could be a good shout for the title next year. Luca Marini. Lots of people gave Luca Marini a bit of a hard time because obviously being Valentino Rossi's half-brother, mm-hmm. do maybe have one or two doors open for you that the likes of you or I wouldn't have open to a Scott. But Marini is actually he's a really good rider to watch. He's so aggressive. He'll be in the World Championship next year. I maybe would have given him another year in CEV, but he's definitely aggressive enough for the World Championship. And I think that he could really get his teeth stuck in and produce one or two good results.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he comes along. Some people are probably giving him that silver spoon, type of title. But yeah, I mean, he's proven himself on his own despite the connection with his famous half brother. So, but yeah, speaking of the Moto2 CEV class, there again, we got us American fans are going to have somebody to cheer for over there in that class next year with Jason Uribe.
Oh, yeah. Is Uribe how you say his last name? Because
yeah, okay, I believe Uribe. So. Okay. Yeah, Jason Uribe is from the American West Coast. And I believe this year he ran in the French Superstock 600 class and actually won a race and was got the lap record at one of the tracks. And he's going to be racing for the AGR Moto2 team.
That's the same team as Stephen Odendaal. That's a quality team.
Yeah, yeah. So Uribe's, definitely, I think, has some promise, and he's positioning himself to maybe be the next, American hope to reach the GPs. Obviously, he's going to have to prove his mettle in that super tough CEV Moto2 class. But, there again, high hopes for him to hopefully progress out of there up into the big show.
Yeah, it really is elbows out in that Moto2 class, especially with guys like Alan Tesche. If you thought, Moto2 can get brutal in the World Championship, then you should watch a CEV race or two. But stepping up to the big bikes, to the superbike class, Carmelo Morales on that brand new Yamaha absolutely dominated. Unfortunately, most of his rivals got injured, or like Danny Rivas, were unfortunately killed. Kenny Noyes obviously had his quite serious crash at Aragon and is still recovering. Ivan Silva, he missed the last five races as he broke his leg in a world endurance race. And then, yeah, so those were the main guys to challenge Morales. Morales was only off the podium once, and that was when he crashed in Albacete and remounted to finish in fourth. So, yeah. Yeah, he definitely made it look pretty easy. Yeah, the thing with the superbike class is, much like Moto America, is in the CEV there's the superbikes and then there's the privateers. And, you know, in theory, the privateers are on stock machinery, but to step from the privateer to the superbike class, it's also based on rider results. So it is sort of quite clear that there are two very different levels within that superbike class. But there are one or two, like, really interesting names to watch. Max Scheib, a Chilean kid, he stepped on to the bike that Danny Rivas vacated for the final five races, and he was second in four of those races. So Scheib's a really aggressive rider, so I reckon that he could be quite good next year if he stays, or maybe he'll get snapped up by a stock 1000 team. But yeah, as I said, you know, the draw of the CV is certainly Moto 3 and to a lesser extent Moto 2, because unfortunately there isn't really the depth in that superbike class. And you do have, I think this was Morales's sixth CV title and his fourth in the 1000cc class. So he's really the king of that championship, sort of like the Josh Hayes of Spain, more or less.
Right, obviously. But I tell you, you know, it's really quite a sweep, or quite a coup for Yamaha with that new R1. I mean,
yeah,
you know, they basically dominated, I guess, every major national series.
I think the only one they didn't win was the IDM Championship, which was won by a BMW and a Yamaha. And unfortunately, both the Yamaha riders there, Damien Cudlin and Max Neukirchner, had quite serious injuries, which is probably the only reason that they didn't have better results.
Yeah, because, you know, there again, I was just talking a lot with, you know, Moto America was the same with, you know, Josh Brooks and British Superbike, and I'm sure the, you know, Morales and in the Japanese Superbike class that were, you know, they were developing that bike as the year went on. I mean, you saw it with Brooks and BSB that, you know, it took them till, you know, well into the season before they really hit their stride. But man, when they did.
Yeah, when they did, they really hit it hard.
Absolutely. So, yeah, you know, I mean, good, you know, kudos to Yamaha for coming out with such a weapon.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how Yamaha do in superbikes, because throughout the private Jerez test, Yamaha were the only superbike team not running transponders. So we still don't know how that Yamaha superbike compares to Kawasaki, which is currently the benchmark on the world level.
Yeah, and, you know, I have no doubt that Alex Lowes will not be a contender on that thing. I just hope he can keep it upright.
You
know, more often than not. Gintoli, in my mind, I mean, you know, Sylvain is a great rider, but he's a little bit of a question mark in my mind. You know, I don't know. It's I know he being on the Honda this past year, it was, you know, the fire blade's a little bit long in the tooth, but I mean, he was consistently outperformed by his young teammate Vandermark, and I think Sylvain's really going to have to get out there and prove his worth.
I mean, you saw with Gintoli's championship is that Gintoli's a very safe rider, is that he can be on the podium, but he's probably not going to risk losing out on second place, you know, to get those extra 5 points. He's more happy to just, you know, reel it in. Whereas I think that, as you said, Lowe's, much like his twin brother, is very quick, maybe a little too quick sometimes. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how those two guys go. And there's still a big question mark over if Josh Brooks and the Sean Muir Milwaukee Racing team will be stepping up to the world level. Because I think that if Brooks steps up, Brooks could, if they stay with Yamaha, that is, I think that Brooks, especially in the opening rounds, could do some damage.
Yeah, and speaking of that Yamaha team, I mean, I know there were me and quite a few of, you know, the American fans were were disappointed that Cam Bobier didn't get a shot at that, and taking nothing away from either of the two riders that are getting that opportunity. But I know Wayne Rainey for one, and Yamaha, the American branch of Yamaha, was pushing really hard to try to make that opportunity open up for Cam Bobier. And I know that Rainey had said on several occasions that if he didn't win the Moto America Superbike Championship, that he didn't really probably need to make that move. But when he did win the championship, there was high hopes that maybe that move would be accomplished. But it was not, and maybe it's for the best. That's going to be a first year team. For the Paul Denning squad. Perennial Suzuki squad. It could be a steep learning curve here, but like I say, I heard some, there was also the comments that, man, why wouldn't they put Josh Hayes on that bike just for 1 year? just knowing the level, his level of familiarity with that bike, and then just, the ability he's shown over the years. And yeah, Hayes admits it, he says, I'm an old guy now, as far as international competition goes. And, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they fare out. You got to figure that if they can get things figured out, in a timely manner, that they're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, certainly. Just quickly, you mentioned that Wayne Rainey was really pushing for Bobier to get on the world stage, and I think that's really good and really important for Moto America, is that you do have someone who's not only in control of the championship, but also someone who's as big a name as Rainey, trying to help get his top riders out onto the world stage. I think that's a really good hands-on approach for Rainey to be taking.
Yeah, and I think it really, pains guys like Rainey and Swantz and those guys that have been there and that want to see some of the really talented American riders get a shot at it again. And it's been unfortunate the way things have worked out over the last few years, but I think almost unfairly some of our riders have been snubbed because of circumstances. And I think we all understand, kind of why that has happened. But hopefully with these guys in place, with the Rainey and the way they're running the show now, and the desire and the drive they have to see some of our young talent make it back over there, that sooner than later, that we're going to see that come to fruition.
Hopefully. Now on to the most important part of the show, and obviously why everyone listens. Not only was it good to have you on for the Moto America chat, Scott, but for this next section, it was also quite important to bring you on for this. So as everyone knows, the MotoPod Fantasy League, it's drawn to a close for yet another year. It was a pretty successful year overall. We had a lot of participants, and of course next year we will be running it again. Be sure to send your emails to motopod@motopodcast.com if you support or don't support Martin's idea of who can spend the most money but score the least points as an alternative league. Obviously, we're still going to have the main proper league always, but maybe to spin it and give guys, like Jim Race and like Len Padilla, maybe give them a bit of a chance to win something. But the overall winner of the series, he'd been at the top for most of the year. He was 119th overall out of the thousands of people who enter the MCN Fantasy League, was Roberto Bobigno with Roberto Bobigno's Racing, 2,017 points, just 2 points ahead of John Allen with Pandora's Box 2015. So a really nice tight battle at the top there, and good to see that, the guys from MotoPod are really getting it out there on the world stage. 119th overall for Roberto, really good result. Then Steve James with MK Racing, he was third with 2,009 points, which was pretty incredible. I can't quite figure out how these people managed to score so many points. That's a lot. But Scott, you know a thing or two about scoring a fair few points. Team MotoDog, eighth overall, first in the most important world championship, the Motopod Hosts MCN Fantasy League World Championship with 1,974 points. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you, sir. But definitely kudos to Mr. Bobinho and the gentleman that took the podium, in the Motopod League overall. But yeah, it's quite an honor to top the host league. And of course, now that I've, hopefully this counts as an official host appearance, and Martin can't hold that over my head. But no, Martin was great competition. He pushed me hard, especially through the second part of the season for the bragging rights for the hosts. And yeah, just was barely able to edge him out. And, you know, Harry, you were you weren't too far back there for most of the year. So we thought we were going to have to deal with you there for a little while.
Yeah, I think I need to rethink my strategy a bit. But Martin Darlington, as you said, Scott, takes the silver medal. The second place is just the first loser, unfortunately, for Martin. 13th overall, not too bad. Doha Donuts, 1,956 solid points from Martin. I'm sure that this will only motivate Martin more and push him to come back even harder next year. He certainly likes talking about the MCN League, so I've already gotten a whole email folder set up for him for next year. Then I was 25th overall, taking the bronze medal. Necessary faster, definitely something we need to do for next year. Jules Cizek, 80th overall, fourth in the league. Dave Neal managed to claw his way up, just what's that, 190 points behind Jules. Strawbell's mediocre, 137th overall. Jim Race, pretty disappointing, 197th overall with 1,225. And then, unfortunately, bringing up the rear is probably the fastest on track out of all of us. Mm-hmm. So at least he wins that award. Len Padilla, 206th. But he did manage to crack 1,000 points. So, you know, at least there's that. But yeah, I guess with the Motopod Fantasy League, 2016 is officially over. It's been a... Not 2016 is officially over. I'm getting ahead of myself. 2015 is officially over. And what a year it was. As we said, you know, wrapped up most of the domestic championships. There was great racing throughout a lot of them. You know, if you do come to Motopod for just the MotoGP and the World Superbike chat, hopefully this episode did sort of get you intrigued for some domestic racing. As I said, the CEV stuff is all on YouTube. Most of the Moto America stuff isn't too hard to find, and when it is on, it is free to watch and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, if you don't have anything better to do on a Sunday afternoon, then be sure to check out one of those domestic championships.
Yeah, and I believe Moto America's website actually has links to the CEV races. So
they usually do promote that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. So one-stop shop with CEV. So now we will roll into all of those interviews that I said at the start. So that is Ant West, Roger Lee Hayden, Stevie Bonzi, Tony Elias. I guess with that, Scott and I will say goodbye and leave you with, you know, some pretty big names there. Thank you for coming on the show, Scott, and hopefully we'll get to have you on a bit more next year. And yeah, as we said throughout the show, motopod@motopodcast.com, send in your emails. We're now well and truly into the off-season, so now we're going to start going through that off-season suggestion email folder, and hopefully not forget too many emails.
Yeah, my pleasure, Harry. Cheers.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Jim Race here for Motopod with Anthony West. We are in Las Vegas.
Yep. Me, first time here, so it's been an experience. And first time here in Vegas, first time racing American flat track. No front brake and 19-inch wheels is definitely a bit of a surprise to me. And also the steel shoe, because in our tracks in Australia, we go left and right, and we use different size wheels, and we have a front brake. And so to come here, use a steel shoe, everything was really thrown in deep end. And just the first time out on the track, I was everyone said I was good to watch, but completely out of control. So
well, the way that this was described to me, in one of the favorite ways that I actually heard about it, was it was a boxing match in a phone booth.
Definitely, yeah, it's definitely, that's what it was like out on a track racing with those guys. Almost every time you enter into the turn, you had a handlebar in the side of you, or you could feel the front wheel of another guy brushing up against your foot. So it's definitely close racing and a lot of pushing and shoving. And my last race, I think I had a good start. And then can't remember who it was, someone on Suzuki just pushed me out wide. But that's what the racing here is like. It's really close and everyone's pushing really hard, and sometimes a little bit dirty, but most of the time it's pretty clean and really close. So it's been a lot of fun.
Cool. Talk to me about GP this year. So let's go back to what was actually going on with the time that you spent on the Grand Prix season.
I've been the last few years with the QMF racing team, and this year things had changed in the team. Some things which I wasn't really happy about, and I had one guy in the team that didn't actually want me there. But it wasn't his decision that I was meant to be in the team. It was the Qataris that wanted me there because I have a good relationship with the Qatar people. But the guy that's managing the team didn't want me there. So he did everything in his power to try and destroy my year. So he wouldn't let the suspension guy work on my bike, on my suspension, and he would put all the new parts on my teammate's bike because he was Spanish, and he was doing everything he could to make him beat me. And at the beginning of the year, I was always quicker than my teammate, even in the races, at the first races. And then as the year went on, he just tried to do everything he could to make my life harder and more difficult because he wanted me to get kicked out of the team. And in the end, he was successful. So it's kind of frustrating to do a year like that when you're fighting with the people that don't want you there. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to have any contact with the Qatari people because they're kind of really private and difficult to talk with, and no one has their email or phone number just to call them up. So and in the years past, they always come to a lot of races and I could speak with them directly, and this year they haven't really been to any races. And when I have seen them, it was like on the start grid lining up for the race, and you come and shake my hand, say good race, and then you disappear before the race is over. So it's disappointing because I think we had a good relationship with the Qatar people and I would have liked to continue, but with the guy that they have running the team, he's just destroying the team and just tried to destroy my year, and in the end he got me kicked out. But in the end, I was a bit disappointed for the first week and disappointed with the results I had, because I know it could have been a lot better this year if I didn't have to battle against this guy. But I got to ride on the MotoGP bike. It was a lot of fun for the last three races, and just I actually felt more happy racing. So the last three races in MotoGP was the first time I actually smiled racing the bike. So it was good to have that sort of feeling back, because all year it's been kind of stressful and disappointing with how the situation was. So I had a lot of fun riding that bike. It wasn't really competitive, but I was happy to be on it.
I'm gonna drag you back, because we were talking about this briefly before we're actually recording it. Your time on the Kali.
Yeah.
Those were some good times.
Yeah, definitely. Anytime on a MotoGP bike, it's a good time, because the bikes are cool, they're so fast, and it's like the best bike in the world that you can ride. It's a top level bike, and you can't compare it to any other motorcycle, because they're just so much far ahead in technology, and how they feel to ride is completely different to anything else I've ridden. So always fun to ride them, and I had a good time with Kawasaki. But yeah, it was a difficult year, and me and Hopkins, we struggled throughout the year. I think Kawasaki had a good bike, but they'd sort of lost their way in direction a bit, and I think we could have had better results if they weren't so stubborn and listened a little bit more to the riders, including myself. And it took them all year to actually sort of realize that, fighting with the Japanese, that I want to go one direction, they think I'm wrong because I don't have the experience. At the time, I didn't have the experience on MotoGP bike, so they didn't want to listen to me. And then I was quite sure I was always right, and as you always think you are. But it was quite funny, at the end of the year the Japanese come to me and said, "Oh, we're really sorry for not listening to you all year, because we we went and built a bike with all your requests, and this is something I didn't know about. And
when you finished, was what Melandri rode.
Exactly. It was a bike that Melandri ended up riding. Yeah. So they built that bike with all everything I've been requesting all year. So they finally did listen to me, but it was at the Valencia last race that they told me, and they sent the bike to Phillip Island. They had Olivier Jacques ride it, and he said, this is the best bike we've ever had, and he went 0.7 or 0.8 faster than he'd ever been around Phillip Island.
Yeah.
And that was the bike that Melandri got for the next year, and then Kawasaki pulled out, so...
Or turned into Hayata.
Yeah. So it was disappointing that they didn't listen to me, and I think it's disappointing that Kawasaki pulled out when they finally listened and they made a really good motorcycle, so... Yeah, it's frustrating when things like that happen. But.
Well, welcome to racing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, always.
As you sit here covered in dirt.
Yeah.
And clay.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is radio, but folks out there can't tell, but I'm sitting here in front of Ant West, and he's pretty much filthy.
Filthy, dirty, sweaty, and this is a lot different to road racing when you come off the track. Normally I'm just sweaty, but now I'm dirty. And
I believe there's a pint right over there.
A what?
A pint.
A pint.
A pint of ale.
Ah, yeah. That's definitely what's needed. I think after racing in Vegas, that's what you need is a good pint. Have a cold one and enjoy the racing here. It's been awesome, and I've been on a motorcycle every weekend for the last 2 months or more, and I've been riding 600s and MotoGP bikes and Moto 2 bikes and now dirt tracks, so I've been all over the place, but having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I did note on Facebook you were making fun of this Yamaha layout, but now we're sitting here under the Yamaha layout.
I kind of feel bad because when I first got here, because we've had a hard week. When I came to America, we had problems with my manager's truck breaking down, and then we were able to go to New Mexico to do a test and try and meet some sponsors.
Oh, that's right. And you set a lap record.
Yeah.
So at a Royal awesome. Seca?
Yep.
Yeah. Well done. Yeah,
thank you. Yeah. So it's been, we've had a hard time. We've been working on his truck. We've spent 2 days underneath it, pulling the transmission out of it and having a hard time. And then we got here at 3 a.m. the other night, and then we had to jump on the bike. And it was the first time I rode the bike. So been flat out, but it's been a good time, and I think the main reason to come to America this trip was to try and keep my name out there, and I'd like to try and get some sponsorship to race either here in America or in England. At the moment, they're my two places I'm really focusing on.
I can totally see you doing BSB.
Yeah. BSB is a really good strong championship, and I think the American one is it's on its way up.
Yeah,
from what I see, it's I think the Moto America, the new guys that are running it, they seem to be doing a good job, and the money's not back yet, but I think in the future it will be, and we'd
love to have you over here.
I've been racing for 16 years now in Europe, and kind of looking for a new challenge and something different, and being on a bike where I can win races instead of always battling with uncompetitive machines in the world championship. So that was my main focus, to come here and just so people can meet me. I think it's better if people meet you in person instead of trying to send emails saying, hey, I want to race here. Then they don't really see that you're serious. But
I'd grow your hair back out again, because people will recognize you easier that way.
For sure. It's been fun, and I think we've achieved everything we've wanted to do on this trip. It's been a hard one, but I think the result here in the dirt tracks was good, and we had a lot of fun doing it.
Good. Well, I'm glad you had fun. It was great fun watching you ride. Look at your helmet.
I know. Normally I have one or two bugs on my visor, but yeah, my helmet's completely filthy.
No, good times. Very filthy track. If I see you over at the pub, I'd be happy to buy you a pint.
Awesome, that'd be fun.
All right, cheers, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Say hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Stevie Bonson.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas, and it was definitely a crap shoot, and I got the short end of the stick this weekend.
Yeah, it was looking good for a while.
Yeah, well, that's how this short track goes. It can go good in practice and completely flip in the main, or it can go shitty in practice and come around in the mains. But it's hard. You just got to race hard, and every chance you're out on the track, just give it your best, and hopefully the luck is in your favor, and you don't get cleaned out by somebody or make a stupid mistake.
Yeah. The size of the track has everything to do with it.
Yeah, the size of the track, the shape, definitely, and then also the dirt and the holes. It was all around a really physical track. I mean, you had to get your eyes looking forward because there's constantly something going.
Yeah,
I'm sore. So you got to just be aware of your surroundings and who's behind you, because that kind of matters too. Being that we race these guys day in and day out, we kind of know what the rider's going to do what. So it's good to know who's behind you and also who's in front of you. But,
is there a huge part of you that wants to go back to road racing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I went to boot camp, Colin Edwards boot camp school Halloween weekend, and you know, he's obviously MotoGP, and there's quite a few road racers there, and it just started bringing back memories. He started telling stories, and you know, I miss it a lot. I really do, and I would love to get back into it, but I'd just like to see a little bit more progression with the Moto America, and kind of see how it pans out. I don't know too much about it. I'm not saying there's anything bad, but I just haven't really looked into it. But I don't know. Right now, I feel like dirt track's probably the best thing I got going for me. Seems these days, if you don't have a couple hundred grand to spend, you're not going to get a decent ride in road racing. So that's what kind of detours me away. But I'm just having fun and just enjoying my life racing.
But there is that quiet satisfaction of doing like 150 miles an hour on a 250cc bike.
Yeah, definitely. There was a couple tracks that were pretty hairy, you know, Kintar, those fast fast three rights, and like Phillip Island, you scoot pretty good, and it gets your adrenaline going. I definitely miss all that stuff.
And you were good at Aragon too, I think.
No, not Aragon. Estoril.
Oh yeah, okay, Estoril. Yeah.
Yeah. Did well there. Yeah, I should have won that race, I think. If I'm correct, I think I had the fastest laps of the race. I just got a really bad start and had to make my way back to the front. But yeah, it would have been cool if I would have got at least one podium in my short-lived MotoGP career.
I could totally see the look in your eye. You're like, yes, I want to go back to road racing.
And it might be a bad thing, but I get real bored of the same thing.
Yeah.
Probably the reason why I don't have a girlfriend right now.
always turning left.
Yeah. So, no, I like to do different things. In my life, I like to explore things. Like, I rode a bull a couple times the other day, just because what excites me, I go that way. And I don't know how some people can work a job and just go to maybe an office and it's the same kind of thing every day and it just comes routine. I like to just change it up, and you only live once and it's short, so you might as well try to get every aspect of the fun in this world as you can.
Yeah. Well, so you're in Vegas and nothing is the same as when you're at home.
No, we're this is one of the coolest races because, you know, we see these people all the time. Well, not all of them, but a lot of them. But it's extra special that we're all at the same casino.
Yeah.
And we all get to hang out at the bar and tell all our war stories
Make shit up. Yeah.
Yeah, make shit up and tell bullshit stories and drink cocktails and it's a good way to wrap up the year.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck, and I hope to have you back on a bike with slicks in very short order.
I hope so too. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Jim Race here for MotoPod with Roger Lee Hidden. Well done. One of the only, in fact, I think the only trio of brothers that has ever landed on a flat track stage.
Uh-huh.
This has got to be an interesting weekend for you.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting just because I haven't did a dirt track race in
14 years, probably 15 years. No, not 15, but it's been 10 years since the last time I did a real flat track race like this, so it was definitely different. It was a lot to get used to. It was fun. I was really happy with how the main went. You know, bummer that somebody got inside of me and knocked me out of third. But that's just part of it. Just that, I mean, it was a clean move. It was just two guys wanting the same piece of pavement.
This track, they basically say it's like a boxing match in a phone booth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, it was fun. I enjoyed it. I've been riding a lot to get ready for it. So, you know, it's fun.
Yeah. Does it make you want to go back and do more flat track?
Yeah, it does for sure. But I need to go ride with some people that can help me, like, tune the bike and, like, suspension settings. I have no idea what to do. You know, okay. We come here, we don't know what air pressure to use or anything. So,
but it seemed like a missile. It was quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was stock, so it was hooked up.
Well, so, damn good for stock.
Yeah, I think it's what helped because it had less power.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would consider it for sure. I mean, it was fun, and, you know, I love competition, and, you know, I think I've shown the main that, you know, I can run with some of those guys.
Well, on top of that, you are in Vegas, so that means that tonight you can let loose.
Nah, them days are behind me.
Roger, I know you're going far enough back. You're probably going to go out a little bit.
Not tonight, I promise you. Yeah. Haven't since I've been here, so.
All right, well behaved. That's not the Roger Lee Hayden that I remember.
Hey, some people grow up.
All right, mate.
Thanks.
Well then.
Thank you.
Jim Race here for Motopod with Tony Elias at Super Fastigio. You're kind of out of your element. You're in a dirt track environment. This is coming from a guy that's raced MotoGP, that is a Moto2 champion. And now you find yourself in Las Vegas, and we're both looking up at the monitor here, and this is a crazy little track. Who are you riding for this weekend?
I ride for Zanotti Racing.
Okay.
With Honda.
Uh-huh.
Since 1 year I didn't take a dirt track bike, since Barcelona Stadium Super Prestigio. Then long time without ride a dirt track bike, but I take the feeling soon. Also, this team helped me a lot because I have a lot of experience. And for me, it's my first time in Las Vegas, and it's amazing just to be here, enjoy a lot, and I'm very happy.
I talked to you inside of the casino last night or the night before, and I'm like, okay, I'm talking to Tony Elias inside of a casino in Las Vegas, and I thought it was like the strangest thing ever.
Yes, it's a very, very strange thing. Just right there, everything was strange for me because I see a lot of machines just out of the plane, and it's full.
Yeah.
Hotel, everywhere. Then I didn't see it before. It's nice. I'm happy to be here. Just trying to enjoy, learning a lot from these monsters, and sure, this will help me a lot for Barcelona Super Prestigio, because I will arrive with much more experience and more ideas about the setup. I've seen many bikes during these 2 days, and it's incredible.
There are some beautiful machines here. It's absolutely incredible how much effort people have put into this, because there is a point of pride in being able to do well here.
Yes, it's nice. Every machine, since the first to the last one, is full of clutch, engine, suspension. Lot of money.
A lot of money.
But it's nice because everybody have the opportunity to be fast with a small budget. Because, for example, road racing is more expensive, no? Then it's more difficult.
Sure. What do you think of the circuit?
Circuit is nice. I think Chris Carr had a best idea to make it like an angle corner, because what I've been seeing in, during these years, when you're in a round track, you have to wait all the time, wait for the mistake.
Yeah.
Here, no. If you do the right line, the back rider have the opportunity to pass you. Maybe if you close, then you are not so fast. Then you have to all the time, lot of dabs,
yeah,
trying to be the best way in the different condition. It's a good idea, and I hope this idea moves to other countries, other championships.
Quite unlike, I'm sure Mike Webb would be sitting here from Race Direction and MotoGP going, oh, there's way too much contact.
Wow. Yesterday I was very, very surprised about these guys don't think. Just go.
Yeah.
Just go in. If inside you have contact, it's no problem. But everybody, the first in the last, are like this. You have to learn a lot from these guys.
your bike looks like it's got quite the pep off the corner, so it looks like it's a very solid machine.
Yes, it's a great bike, very great bike, and also the people, great people, great technicians. Just the problem is for me, I need to get used to everything, because everything is new. Also the 19 wheels, mm-hmm. because in Barcelona I use 17. Then just I set my opinion about what I need, if I lose grip, if I lose the front, or I need more cornering. Then everything I ask, I talk to Dave Zanotti and his team.
Yep.
And they every time give me opportunity, right solution, right way. This is incredible way to work.
Excellent. All right. Well, have a whole bunch of fun. Enjoy yourself. This is what we consider gravy in the United States. It's the chance that you get to just enjoy yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you very much.